Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG tonight, ladies and gentlemen. The forces of evil and good are leading a very tight fight. It's amazing how much evil there is. That's why I use the monster hands on my thumbnail tonight, because it's what I predicted yesterday. I was just thinking about it, like, hypothetically, but the whole taking over of Twitter by the loan sharks that have held the extortion power over Elon is happening. I mean, this morning I wake up to a Yahoo News article that's basically saying, oh yeah, the hypothesis that I had yesterday is what's happening. You have all of these people who have lended money to Elon Musk. They got themselves into the Twitter deal, and they want to renegotiate certain things. Now, certainly, that's going to be a point on which they try to argue, well, you're not getting advertisers. Why free speech? Why don't you sell a little bit of that speech? And we will be back in the same freaking circle of the loop of censorship that's been happening. Elon Musk is about to get the same thing done to him as Jack Dorsey has had, and I don't know if he's prepared. John Drake says BTC heading to all-time high today. Yes, we are flirting with the all-time high of, I think classically people say the all-time high was exactly at 69,000. So we are at $700 away from this. So at the same time, as the forces of evil are working to try to get the internet, at the same time, the Bitcoin exodus is successful. And the Bitcoin is outperforming any expectations we had from it. The BTC ETFs are pouring money into it. And at this point, it's unquestionable we will cross the all-time high very soon, because the price cannot stay. The price cannot stay that close to the all-time high super long. The markets get nervous in those times. So a wonderful day for Bitcoin. Looking at my block clock, we are at 68.2K right now. We might very well be live while the all-time high gets passed. And I was telling my girlfriend today, taking pictures of my block clock, and I was like, it's coming. The all-time high is coming. Oh my God, so much to celebrate in parallel to the evil, in parallel to the attempt at taking back the internet, at clawing back free speech. There is such a liberation at the same time happening. It is filled with emotions today. A decision from the Supreme Court on top of it. It was a big Monday. A pro-Trump decision. Even the liberal justices have had to side here with the conservative justices. So the whole question was, can Democrat states declare that Trump had made an insurrection and therefore he can't be a candidate on the ballot for presidency? Now, the 14th Amendment that specifies this whole thing was taken because of the Civil War. And the reason it was taken was to deny access to offices to supporters of the South once the North had won. So it was literally to keep the U.S. government, which was then the Northern interest that had won the war, to make sure that it wasn't getting infiltrated by the Southern people. And so the 14th Amendment is very precise. It's, you can feel that they're talking about insurrectionists, but insurrectionists of the kind that would have been in government, that would then have engaged in the Civil War, and that would try to return to the government. It was very specific, and the leftists have tried to extend this to a modern-day insurrection that Trump would have ordered by simply telling his supporters to protest peacefully. And there was something very bizarre that could not be, in my view. which is you cannot have states decide if they allow a candidate or not. Because if so, imagine all the Republican states deciding that Joe Biden isn't a candidate. Now, all of these states would, you would end up with only the choice of Trump. Then the Democrat state, you would only end up with the choice of Joe Biden. And ultimately, we would have destroyed democracy. Now, not that I respect democracy, but from a liberal democratic perspective, that didn't make sense to me. So it couldn't be that the U.S. Supreme Court would allow states to have that much control. So logically, the justices have argued this morning, look, the federal presidency is a federal task. Even the lowest level employees of the federal government, there's things that states cannot do to them. They cannot subpoena them or whatever if they do something as part of their job. In other words, once you work for the federal government, you are a federal jurisdiction, of course. And the 14th Amendment, on top of it, mentions that Congress. Now, it doesn't say Congress has the absolute authority on all questions of insurrection. But there is a passage in the 14th Amendment that says, oh yeah, also Congress could annul this thing. And so basically it gives the only place where the responsibility for all this is attributed is in this passage of the 14th Amendment that says, oh yeah, and Congress can do this and that. So the U.S. Supreme Court reasoned that if the Congress has power over that part of the 14th Amendment, they have power over any federal employee for all of the 14th Amendment purposes. And we wouldn't let a state decide that a federal employee does not qualify. The federal employees are always supervised by Congress, and it's the same for president. So basically, they didn't have to say Trump didn't commit an insurrection. But they basically argued, if you want to kick Trump for that kind of reason, you're going to have to do it in Congress. You can't do it through the state. Makes total sense. Speaker's Corner says there are $690 million worth of shorts that get liquidated at 69K. It's almost impossible, which is why... I took my change money that I had in some lost wallets and I invested it in a 100x long. There's no there's no way this price crashes. There's just too much a juicy short to be fed on. BTC is going to pierce the all-time high, I'm pretty sure. The cope is major on the mainstream media.
Welcome back. Take a look at Bitcoin. There it is, over 67,000. We're approaching all-time highs, Mr. Weiss.
Yep.
It's another 7% today. What's behind this other than momentum?
Pure momentum. What a way to not answer anything. Like, pure momentum. Oh, I don't know. Oh, that's just momentum. Yeah, it's like looking at a car and someone is driving it and is intentionally pressing the accelerator to just bump, to just crash into a brick wall. And you're like, Jeff, why is this car headed toward a brick wall? And I'm like, momentum, just pure momentum, 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 blah, blah, blah. It's yeah. Momentum is speed. Momentum is speed, is a trend to slide at a certain speed given position in time, i.e. speed. So momentum is nothing else than speed. And when we talk of it in physics, we talk of a kind of an inertia, an amount of energy that is being invested or that has been invested in moving an object. Per momentum. Yeah, well, that means nothing, bro. Why is there momentum? Because everyone in the world wants Bitcoin.
There's still no use case. Well, there are a few things.
There's still no use case. How do you, Mr. Weiss, do you send $1 billion to a Thai prostitute? How? Bitcoin allows me to do this in 5 minutes. I'm giving you 5 minutes right now, Weiss. I want you to send $1 billion to a Thai prostitute.
Momentum. Kramer came out today and said he thinks it's because people trust fiat currencies less because of everybody's upside down is in debt to GDP. I don't really think that's the case. I just don't think they're that big deeper. Sure, there's a small element that believes that all economies, all sovereigns are going to hell, so they can hide.
Oh, the jury here. A small contingent that believes that everyone is going to hell and therefore Bitcoin will rise above. He's talking about Christians here. He's talking about pro-Bitcoin Christians. Hello, Mr. Weiss.
Bitcoin. That's not it. It's purely the marketing power right now of BlackRock or Fidelity.
Oh, but it's not going to happen. The companies and the countries aren't going to hell.
And more to come. But to show you how ridiculous it is, Bitcoin isn't even the top foreign currency. I think Bite the Dog or whatever the hell currency's name is up 400%.
I don't know which Bite the Dog? Is that a currency? Is he talking about Doge? Bite the Dog. Is he talking about Doge? Speaker's Corner, see, what the fuck is he talking about? Shiba Inu?
I mean, it's just...
So it's, it's like a perfect storm.
And by the way, none of these alternative currencies are stronger than Bitcoin. None of them. They don't approach. ETH doesn't approach, but certainly not Bite the Dog.
For crypto. This particular asset class right now between the approval of the ETFs and the biggest names in the asset management business getting into it with some speculative fervor in parts of the market, biotech maybe here too, and overall risk on.
Complete perfect storm. Yep. But I think you have to look at the
dog Wi-Fi hat. I have no idea what this reference is, guys. You're going to have to explain it to me. The dog wife hat.
The two products that investors really focus on. Number one, obviously, Bitcoin, which has been traditionalized with the advent of the ETFs. Here's the interesting one, and here's the thought. You have Bitcoin up 58%.
Right.
You have Ethereum up 57%. Ethereum doesn't have the ETF yet. So you have a lot of people who are going to own Ethereum on the belief that an ETF is coming. Is Ethereum riding the back of Bitcoin? Or is Ethereum rallying on the belief that the ETF's coming? Because if it's rallying on the back of Bitcoin, then there's so much more alpha that can be generated in owning Ethereum relative to Bitcoin because the ETF's not there yet.
Yeah. Oh, my God. This guy is thinking in, he's thinking economically in 19th century term. He's wondering if, hey, will there be more potential for growth on the ETH side, given that the ETFs aren't there yet? Maybe, maybe not. BTC ETFs aren't even that much of a driver. It's the demand. The demand is there. And as far as BTC to ETH, there will be such liquidity that ETH will grow with BTC no matter what. There's just way too many ways to exchange BTC to ETH. And this is true even with the ETFs. The only thing that the ETFs do is that they reserve a portion of the assets that is more hard, that has one more step to get from BTC to ETH or vice versa. But no matter what happens, the trade routes between the two and the arbitrage surveillance that exists around this ecosystem are such that no one can tell you that there is... He calls it alpha to generate. Alpha. Bro, that's not alpha. That's like... That's delta, bro. You're thinking so late about this. There's currently people who are just clicking on mice, just trying to get... $1 more by exchanging BTC to ETH, and You're not alpha at all, bro. This is a beta. This is a theta question.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but I don't think that deeply. I just think it's, you know, sheep, you know, being let to.
And people were pointing out that comment. The host will say that comment will be clipped. I don't think about it that much deeply.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but I don't think that deeply. I just think it's, you know, sheep, you know, being led to slaughter.
Can we replay that?
Sheep being led to slaughter? That's what you call people being able to buy their house? Sheep being led to slaughter? Do you know how every person that I've had Bitcoin to my recommendation or not that I know, have all lived a healthy financial life since they have Bitcoin. They're all set with zero debt. They paid for their house. They have cars. They don't have loans. He calls this sheep being led to the slaughterhouse. You know what the slaughterhouse is? It's usury. It's mortgages. It's you pay forever all of your life and you don't even own the house at the end.
Like multiple times over the next 10 years.
Yeah, what?
I don't think that deeply.
I don't
guys,
think that deeply.
Guys, the control room, cut it. Cut it now and save it. Send it to me so we all preserve a copy forever. We're going to be the National Archives of you, Weiss.
You know, I got to be careful. Any edge I give you in that regard, that being...
You're not giving anyone any edge. You're a liar. You are there to represent an old system that will be overcompeted, that will be eliminated by Bitcoin. It's not going well for the Jews financially, and they're starting to talk about it. The golden age of American Jews is ending. Anti-Semitism on the right and the left threatens to bring to a close an unprecedented period of safety and prosperity for Jewish Americans and demolish the liberal order they helped establish. So as much as the forces of evil are working hard, extremely hard to keep control over the world, they also see that they're losing it. And that is fascinating. That is a win, as Andrew Tarba points out. This just sold for $16 million. It is the second most expensive CryptoPunk ever. It was CryptoPunk number 3,100, one of 9 so-called alien punks. It sold for 4,500 ETH. Look, this is hilarious. The NFT trend. I kind of like the NFT technology, but I know that much people are going to throw money at this and lose it. So be careful. If you don't know what you're doing, if you're not into the hobby space of throwing money out the window, avoid NFTs. But, you know... Those are risky calls that, who knows? Can this CryptoPunk in 100 years from now sell for 4,500 ETH or not? That's the question. It's ultimately the question of art buyers. Like, if you buy a Van Gogh 150 years ago, how much is it worth today? And is that better than owning Apple? Maybe it is. Maybe it is. Who knows? But when you look at the number of pixels, it's unbelievable. $16 million? I mean, I could draw it pixel by pixel on paint. The eyes of this guy have 4 pixels. Black, black, dark blue, light blue. Holy shit. Man, I do still have on sales my NFT. My NFT can be purchased for 50 Bitcoin. Back in the days, 50 Bitcoin at this current price, what would it be? Back in the days, I had set it at, it was a million. So $3.4 million is the current price of my NFT. If you want to buy it, if you're a millionaire out there, perhaps as Bitcoin price rises, I can ask for less Bitcoin because I had set the original price at $1.5 million for my letter to humanity. Perhaps I will lower the price. Jan has sent $100. Thank you so much, Jan, for the amazing support of the show. By the way, for all of you who support the show during my vacation, I have found a way to pause the Patreon and the Subscribestar, so you won't have to pay for that month. I have given a free month to everyone, but I will not be on the internet, so we won't have the private hangout. But thankfully, both Patreon and Subscribestar had the option to pause during my vacation, so I declared a vacation for the whole month of April. You will not be charged on the 1st of April. Jan has sent $100. Thank you so much. Imagine a movie like Apocalypto, but set in Africa. It follows a black man that gets captured by black slave traders. He gets sold to Jewish slavers that load him on a ship headed to the U.S. As a twist, the British turn up and sink the slave ship together. They go get revenge on the family killers. You got something right there. I don't think the liberal order will like to see this movie. But that would be, I would love to follow the life of savages of all sorts. By the way, when I was young, when I was studying cinema at the university, I was a big fan of savage documentaries and, you know, that kind of stuff. I was super interested in the anthropological study of early civilization, primitive civilization. There are a couple of French documentarists who have done amazing work on this, and some of them went into Africa and they built stories around, you know, the whole documentary is an integration of the tribe and you can kind of follow a story. And one of my favorite movies ever, what I say is the most beautiful movie ever made, was an anthropological look into a small island of Quebecois people, of French Canadians, the Îles aux Coudres, which was made by Pierre Perrault. And it's called Pour la suite du monde, for what's to come. And it's really the most beautiful movie that exists. It is fascinating that they've done this kind of reality TV show with a bunch of relatively primitive Christian French Canadians, primitive in the sense that they live on an island. So they do have a boat, but it's the only contact they have with the rest. And at the beginning, you know, this was filmed back in the days when they were sending someone to the moon. And they were about to send someone to the moon. And at the beginning of the movie, one of the characters is in there and he's in front of a camera. And they captured this where he's talking about, I don't believe, you cannot go on the moon. The moon feeds the earth. He says, the moon, you can see that it loses a slice every month. Every part of the month. And every slice that is lost comes to feed a tree on Earth. And if you land on the moon, you're going to fall. You're going to get a slice of the moon cut under your feet. I mean, fascinating that we can have an anthropological look thanks to good direct cinema. We can have a look at a brain that was in a different time thinking different things. And I don't know much about the ones they did in Africa, but I know I had studied, I was in a course about these documentaries and there were a lot that I would want to watch. What's the name of this French documentarist who was specifically doing this in Africa? Jan says, you mentioned, he sends another $100. Thank you so much. He says, you mentioned scientific research happening that is obsolete because of TRP. What kind of research does TRP open up and what should be jumped on by young researchers might know about the TRP but can't yet go public about it? Very good questions. Some of the obsolete research by the standard of my book is all this research that seeks to spark the first replicator as RNA. The key to and the thing is, this whole conception that, oh my God, how do we get from clay to RNA? How do we get from energy-containing bubbles to RNA? And it's like, it all skips what we now know thanks to the theory of phenotypic revolution. There was a protein stage to life. There was, period. There is no other possibility. You don't get a genetic code layer if you don't have a phenotypic revolution. So it's not about RNA enzymes and how they ended up creating proteins. It's about proteins and how they ended up creating RNA enzymes. They're stubborn about this. And the MIT professor that I had spoken to was very stubborn about this one. They've convinced themselves that RNA, because it has both enzymatic capabilities and encoding capabilities, must be the root of our focus. No, I say RNA was just like DNA, a byproduct of a phenotypic revolution. So start with protein. That is the one thing that almost no labs do in the world. Saturn Shine says abiogenesis. Yes, so if someone was to do research and wanted to use the revolutionary phenotype as alpha, as kind of an edge to do better research, there are three very productive directions that are directly suggested in my book at the end when I say about my predictions. One, the relationship between quantum Darwinism and protein self-replication. If you can figure that one out, you're going to have basically integrated biology and physics in ways that will have revolutions in both fields. Now, that's a crazy one. Okay, if you were to tell me, JF, that's kind of the JF type long shot. I don't blame a bureaucratic scientist not to engage in this. I would actually agree with this. It's so insane as a consequence that it will happen when it has to happen, but it's not a scientific project you can truly embark on. But there are two very productive directions of research that the first is we must find a reverse translators. We have a reverse transcriptase. We have viruses that exist in RNA and they export themselves into DNA. My theory shows that there must have been a reverse translatase. There must have been a virus that existed in protein form that was exporting itself in RNA form. That is, you can go out there, you can literally take a Q-tip lick of your counter and start asking, maybe it's happening in some of the bacteria that are there, or maybe it's happening in the jungle. You know, we have to start going into single life forms, find new ones. A recent one was found, I was talking about it two shows ago, in the throat of humans, a life form with special properties, RNA-based. It had something that was special that wasn't shared with other viruses. So that's totally research we can do. Let's find the reverse translators. It may be all around us and where we don't even know it. The second thing is in the biodiversity research of a replicator tango bacteria. Because basically my theory predicts the existence of a unicellular organism that has a fat coat like bacteria or like cells of the modern world, but that must not have a genome in self-replicating DNA. It must have a genome in a rotation between RNA and DNA. We never found a life form of that kind. It could either be a virus today that could have descended from a cell before, or it could be a sell still today. So we need to find the common ancestor that I described in my book that must have existed, which is a replicator tango unicellular organism. Right now, all the replicator tangos we know of are viruses. There must be one that has a cell coat. You can literally go Q-tip the whole world until you find it. I'm sure it's there. Or it's dead. If it's not there, it existed, but it's dead. But, you know, knowing life, life always leaves its branches. Like, lampreys didn't have to disappear for moose to appear. Hydras didn't have to disappear for lions to appear. Fish didn't have to disappear for amphibians to appear. So I suspect that it's just because we don't look for it. I suspect that one of these beings that I've described exists under the microscope of a scientist right now, but he's not going to run the test to find it. And it could be in our labs, it could be on our hands, it could be everywhere. So much productive directions of research, and the revolutionary phenotype tells you you're not searching for nothing. You know it's true. This is the first principle approach to biology that basically the last time we've heard of this was the Dawkins, the John Maynard Smith, the Charles Darwin. We finally have in modern times a first principle approach that tells us what the world should have in biology. And it would be the most powerful testament to the value of theory if someone was to find it today. Would be the most beautiful moment. I would cry. Fashi Shad says, Jeff, what are your spiritual beliefs? What are your thoughts on reality? My spiritual belief is that I am a piece of meat that has evolved to record things in my environment as an accidental consequence of the process of evolution. I have also acquired some degree of ability to ask myself questions about the world. And yes, Dino Legovic says physical materialism. Absolutely. Physicalism would be my perspective, my spiritual belief, and my thoughts on reality. Well, it's quite fucked up. It's quite fucked up that the universe ended up being that complex as opposed to a little less complex. Because holy shit, atoms over atoms over atoms, what in the hell made things exist rather than not exist? That is, as a limited being, a meat computer in this universe, I have very limited answers to give to that one. Why do things exist rather than not exist? I once said, well, probably because the things that exist, they fight harder. They fight harder to exist. It's very hard to fight for inexistence. The closest we have is basically entropy. Entropy does seem to fight. The trend seems toward non-existence, but once you have something that reproduces, it keeps fighting against the trend. It keeps maintaining itself. And perhaps some concept like this is necessary to understand the universe. I don't have all the answers. A national treasure, Jesse D. Peterson.
The whole purpose of getting married is to have babies. If you didn't want to have babies, there's no reason to get married.
I'm 40 years old. There's no reason to get married if you don't want babies.
Right.
What about love? What about, like, I wanted a father for my kids. I was a single mom.
Well,
what about that?
How about the father that they already have that made the babies?
Like the abusive one who broke a door over my head and called me a C-word every time I didn't do something he wanted? No. No, thank you.
Oh, I wanted to ask you that. I'm just glad you brought that up. Why are women so abusive today? I noticed that women...
I just tell you that I... I just told you that I got a door broken over my head, and you asked me why women are so abusive.
What were you doing that made him do that?
I'm done. I gotta end this.
No. I want to know.
That is a very good question, because I know there are evil men out there. Certainly there are evil men out there. But generally when a man breaks a door over your head, if that ever happened, generally you've done something. And it's not to say that you deserve a door being broken over your head, but generally you would benefit from asking yourself the question, how do I not escalate to this? DK Shadow says mutual violence is very common. Exactly. I don't know of a man who irrationally just tortures people. It's very rare. If you have a man like this, he is truly deranged mentally. He belongs in a psychiatric hospital. But most of the time, these abuses are escalating situations where the woman is not giving the choice to the man. And Jesse Lee Peterson knows this enough that he can push her on this. That is a very brilliant line of questioning.
What were you doing that brought that kind of anger out of him? Because he didn't just walk in the house, you know, honey, I'm going to break the door off and break your head. What were you doing that brought that out of him? What were you doing wrong?
You need Jesus, friend.
What do you mean?
I gotta end this. I wish you...
Jocelyn Peterson, you need Jesus.
Well, I pray you well, but I gotta be done.
Well, let's do the hot seat before you go.
The hot seat?
Yeah.
You just told me that it's my fault that a man broke a...
He didn't say this. It doesn't have to be your fault. You may be part of the causal route. Wouldn't you want to know if you were part of the causal route of receiving a door over your head? I would. If you told me, Jeff, the reason you keep receiving doors over your head is you keep deciding to go to this restaurant at this hour, and there are guys there building a building, and they have to throw these old doors out of the building onto your head. No, it's not your fault, JF. You just wanted to go to the restaurant. But if you want to avoid doors being dropped over your head, you might want to just change the time at which you go to the restaurant.
A door over my head.
No, that was a question.
I didn't do anything.
So you just sit around.
Now, denial. Now, Jesse Lee Peterson has already dismissed this denial. He already said, I don't think this happened out of nowhere. You must have done something. So at first she says, I didn't do anything.
While being nice, you weren't being difficult or anything.
So if I just shut my mouth and look pretty, then he can.
Why is it that the only woman complaining that men expect them to be pretty cannot possibly be pretty? Like, I've never seen a beautiful woman say, oh, you just want me to be there and be pretty for you. No, it's... Why is it always the ugly woman who are annoyed that they have to stay there and be pretty? The woman who got the beauty, they like this system. They're comfortable with it. Oh wow. All I have to do is be pretty? Are you fucking kidding me? Life is that easy? Whereas these women who are ugly, they just want us to stay there and be little pretty objects. No, lady, you're never gonna get this. You can't be pretty. You are ugly and 40 years old.
Then everything will be fine. And if I just look like a pretty little doll that doesn't have any ideas, it doesn't mind that he's off.
And when they go into that narrative, it's because they have developed a reaction, which is to justify their lack of femininity and their aggression with, oh, well, the opposite of this is submission. They are justifying their revolt. they're like, well, I can't be this pretty little doll that you want me to be because I have individuality. I have agency. But what they do is not individuality and agency. What they do is aggression, abuse, and harassment. And Jesse Lee Peterson is about to totally call her out because up to now, we haven't had any recognition of her side here. She has done nothing. She got a door over her head.
Cheating. If I just stay sweet, then I won't get...
Now she just mentioned suddenly, oh, well, it was cheating.
If I just stay sweet, then I won't get hit and my marriage will be fine, right? Is that what you're telling me?
So what were you doing that caused him to do that, that brought that kind of anger out of him?
I told him that it wasn't okay that he was cheating on me.
And so in the woman narrative, it doesn't matter whether things are true. I don't know whether this guy cheated. Let me tell you that 95% of the women who have told me I was a cheater or who have told anyone I know that were a cheater, they were lying, and I knew it because most of the time they were accusing me of being a cheater, and I hadn't cheated on them. I've never cheated on a woman. Most of the time, a woman who accuses someone of cheating, she may be schizophrenic, delusional. She may be feeling that you're cheating on her emotionally, that you're so emotionally unsupportive that there must be some other girl. You can cheat with your eyes also. Like if your eyes just cross some other woman, you can have cheated. They will accuse you of literally, if your eyes just turn toward a child, they will accuse you of pedophilia. It's even if you are not looking at the child in any sexual way, they are fucking insane in the head. And so here, when she lays out, oh, well, he cheated on me, what she's laying out is not so much the truth. In her female brain, there is no such thing. She is laying out a scheme of responsibility. So she is trying to address the critique of Jesse Lee Peterson that men don't tend to break doors over a woman's head for no reason. She's trying to say, oh yeah, there was a reason. I was claiming a legitimate expectation of loyalty to him. She is reframing the whole thing as, oh yeah, I was a victim of the door. And in fact, from the beginning, I was already a victim. John Drake says, absolutely, I've been called out as a cheater via my gaze. And and this happened to me too. And let me tell you, it was in situations where it was impossible. Like it wasn't even my sight crossing in any desirable way any other woman. It's not like I look at women's ass or boobs or I look at their eyes and try to establish eye contact. It's just that there is a sickness in the female mind. She's unable geometrically to truly understand where you're looking at, so she just makes probabilistic calls, and most of the time she's wrong.
You were harassing him?
And Jesse Lee Peterson, this is the beauty. So, wait a minute, you're telling me that your boyfriend was cheating on you, and you were so defensive about this, you were so going at him with it, that eventually he had to break a door over your head. Like, literally, doors are fucking solid. Like, you don't break a door over a female's head. You're going to break her neck before the door breaks. Let me tell you, these doors, like, I lift them, and sometimes I install them with the little punch-in. Man, a door. He took a door do you know how much trouble it is to untie a door from its side ties? The guy, like, the guy had to do this because you were annoying him that he wasn't loyal. Is it possible that he was loyal? Is it possible that you were delusional? Because, and Jesse Lee Peterson just calls it out instinctively. He says, oh, so you were harassing him. He's probably totally right. Let me tell you, in my experience with women, it is the vast majority of the case. I've had women tell my husband cheated on me, my boyfriend cheated on me, and no evidence of this at all. And I've lived this from a first-person experience, so I know. I know what it takes for a woman to make that judgment, and it's really small amounts of evidence. DK Shadow says, the look on her face tells it all. Yes, beautiful interaction here. This is what scares me. Morgan Stanley leads bank group in talks with Elon Musk to refinance the $12.5 billion debt for X. A consortium of banks led by Morgan Stanley engaged in negotiations with Elon Musk to restructure approximately $12.5 billion in debt acquired during Musk's privatization of the social media platform X. The discussions, which occurred earlier this year but did not progress, aimed at to modify the debt terms to reduce cost and mitigate risks for the banks involved. These banks, including Morgan Stanley as the principal lender, have held onto the debt since 2022, hoping to sell it once X, formerly Twitter, demonstrates financial stability through improved advertising revenue, subscription growth, and the development of a new payment platform. Morgan Stanley reported substantial losses related to this deal in 2022, but noted a reduction in such losses in 2023. Both X and Morgan Stanley have not commented on these discussions. This is extremely worrying. Fashy Chad says, I kind of think Elon is going to pay off the $12.5 billion and then truly open X for free speech and tell the Jews to screw off. Keep dreaming, my friend, but every movement of Elon seems to be more in the opposite direction. Yesterday, I was feeling the forces of evil getting into Elon. And I made this hypothesis that they would play on the debt to extort him. Now we're seeing it. It's happening. It's published in Yahoo News. Banks stuck with X debt held refinancing talks with Elon Musk. It's not beautiful what's happening, because you have these people who have slipped themselves into a deal trying to explain to Elon, oh, it's going to be easier with us. You don't have to sell your Tesla shares, so you don't have to pay taxes. So first they attack you with taxes. It's like, oh, Elon, I'm sorry, you have government problems. If you sell your Tesla shares, you're going to have to pay half of it in taxes. Here, let us loan you the money, and we will loan you the money based on the value of these Tesla shares that you have. That way, you haven't made income. You have just been given a loan. But by doing so, they have inserted themselves into the whole project of free speech of Elon. Now, I don't know what are the details of the contract. There's probably just demons. They're just demon emojis everywhere on this contract. Demon, demon, demon. But whatever it is in these contracts, I think they have given themselves some leverage. Because look at the events that are unfolding. Some random bunch of ex-Twitter employees are suing Elon for separation pay. Some random bunch of Tesla shareholders are suing Elon to steal Tesla shares from him, to retroactively take his salary that he had gotten a couple of years ago, and to cash in on Tesla shares in a way that will make the Tesla shares drop in value. Suddenly, there are all these people who have legal troubles with Elon. It's a setup. It's an attack. It's a legal attack that is being pulled on Elon. And I hope he understands the context in which he is. I hope he understands that he went to war and that he's playing against dirty adversaries here. Elon, evil is around you. You are being attacked by literally, directly, Satan, hell. It's coming from under the soil and they're going after you. They have leveraged taxes over you. They have leveraged their loans over you. They are leveraging public opinion onto you. They're leveraging advertising money. They're trying to pull on all direction Elon until there's no Elon left. DK Shadow says, Elon, you're surrounded. You are, Elon, and I hope you're more clever than them. You know, Trump had, you know, in The Art of the Deal, Trump explains that his technique, basically, sometimes is to throw himself into a bad situation. Like Trump has been an expert at getting banks involved in loans that would totally wreck them. Like he would crash his own companies. And then he would say, I can't pay you that loan back. And then he would say, how about I pay you half of my loan back? And they would say, yes. That is the art of the deal of Trump. Elon, I hope you're being careful, because I'm sure in these contracts, they have inserted these conditions. And eventually, I'm sure they're going to, because in that article, they talk about Elon has to increase his advertising revenue. That's a code word. That's a code word for an Elon kneeling to the forces of evil. That is, if somehow in this loan contract, it says Elon has to do everything he can to maintain or improve the advertising revenue. Now, you just gave power onto free speech to a bunch of third parties. You just gave Ford the right to censor Papa JF. Because you've promised to Morgan Stanley, if you give me $12.5 billion, I'm going to do everything in my power to get those advertisers. Now you have the advertisers coming to you and say, censor Papa JF. Now you are contractually obligated to censor Papa JF. You see how this goes? You see how demonic that is? It's disgusting. That's why I see no other representation than Claus. Evil Claus just coming onto X. It's happening, guys. A Dead Star says, have JF's followers plateaued? Is this a fucking joke, bro? We're in 2024. I've withdrawn from YouTube 3 years ago. Like, is this a fucking joke, Deadstar? My followers have not plateaued. I have isolated on Odyssey with the goal of having a smaller crowd. Now, if you're talking about my Twitter followers, no. They're actually on the growth. I am performing well on Twitter. Since Elon came back, I am on the growth path again. Charlie Kirk says, in the latest legal assault on Tesla from a blue state, look at this. I'm not paranoid. They're pulling everything they have against him. A California judge has cleared the way for 6,000 black Tesla employees to bring a class action suit against Tesla for failing to stop employees from using racist words at a factory. The endless legal offensive against Musk paints a dark picture of America. In just the last few years, a San Francisco jury tried to fine Tesla $137 million because a black elevator operator at a factory supposedly heard Latino contractors make fun of him. A Delaware judge threw out Elon's shareholder-approved pay package, saying he should have been working for free the whole time. The Biden administration sued SpaceX for not hiring enough refugees to work on its advanced sensitive rocket technology. The Biden administration separately sued Musk for the same discrimination case in California that just received class action status. The California Civil Rights Department is also targeting Tesla in an investigation for supposed discrimination. And yet another lawsuit claims that SpaceX doesn't promote enough women or minorities into the company. This is the regime going after productive individuals. And Elon, get the fuck out of anywhere other than the right-wing states. I know that Elon is going toward Texas, and okay, Texas will be okay for a while. But Elon, you cannot build a company in California. They will give it to black people, literally. That's what they're about to do. They're about to do full South Africa. We take Tesla, and now it's black people that own it. The Twitter execs that almost bankrupt Twitter are now suing Elon. Not making this up, Twitter's former executives fired by Elon are now taking him to court for more than $128 million in severance payments. This comes weeks after a court blocked Elon's 100% performance-based compensation package with Tesla. So let me get this straight. The man that got Tesla's share price up 10,000% gets his compensation package axed by the courts, but the executives that bankrupt Twitter get to sue for $128 million. Please explain. The world is upside down. I can't believe what we're seeing. This is not America. It's not even Canada. TLDR of Supreme Court decision, Trump can't be barred from ballots by states. It would take Congress at the federal level because the presidency is a federal thing. The 14th Amendment does say you can take someone out of office for being an insurrectionist. But being a candidate on a ballot is not holding an office. This is one of the shortcut arguments that the Democrats were trying to make. They were trying to say, well, actually, being a candidate is having an official position in our state. In our state, you have the candidate's office. You are occupying the official position of candidacy. And so that's how they tried getting into the 14th Amendment definition. But I think we should agree that if you're at the candidate level, you still don't have the office. You're already, you may have the office, but that's when you should be declared an insurrectionist by the Congress, according to the recent definition of the U.S. Supreme Court. Of course, the leftists are triggered. Keith Olbermann, the Supreme Court has betrayed democracy. Its members, including Jackson, Kagan, and Sotomayor, have proved themselves inept at reading comprehension. And collectively, the court has shown itself to be corrupt and illegitimate. It must be dissolved. Someone was answering, cry more. 9-0. Keith Olbermann said to this, those aren't tears, fascist. They are urine. I'm sure you enjoy being bathed in it. Can you imagine? You start crying. You are convinced that someone starts crying. You are convinced that they are crying tears, but they inform you, know that they are urinating through the eyes, and that they are sure that you enjoy being bathed in what you thought you were helping them swipe away the tears, but it was urine all along, and they are urinating on you. I don't know what happened in this Twitter conversation, but I think some sexual preferences have been revealed. House Dems implode over Supreme Court decision, Raskin crafting legislation to bar Trump from the ballot. So immediately now that the U.S. Supreme Court has said, no, this has to happen at the federal level. Well, now you have the federal anti-Trump people they're starting to get activated to try to get an insurrection claim. Now you're faced with a problem. Because the Washington, D.C. elite just voted for Nikki Haley. She won. She won Washington, D.C. I didn't even know there was a vote in Washington, D.C. I thought it wasn't a state, so I thought they wouldn't have a say on the presidential candidate. They have voted, the Washington, D.C. elite has voted for Nikki Haley, the swamp. Now you have a problem. What if all of the Democrats, in face of the U.S. Supreme Court decision, What if all of the Democrats are up to find Trump an insurrectionist at the federal level, and all you would need is a handful of Republicans? You're certainly going to have enough people in the DC elite to find Trump an insurrectionist and to try to put Nikki Haley instead. Now we have a major problem. They will try to find Trump an insurrectionist at the federal level. And they might very well have many Republican allies, the Mitt Romneys of this world, who will be there just to get vengeance on Trump. That would suck, man, because, I might vote Joe Biden if that happens. I might actively campaign for Joe Biden because more disgusting than Joe Biden is Republican elites, anti-Trump Republican elites taking over the Republican Party, in my view. Fans are concerned that Adam Ross may be on heavy drugs after seeing this video.
His father's way back home, and it's so true. Lie around, around. I know, fuck it.
Yeah, a lot of these streamers. He makes me think a lot about Andy Warski. He looks. Andy Warski had the same kind of irrational, kind of hangry type of reactions at time, and he was on drugs. So he makes me think of Andy Warski back in the days. CNN has a meltdown over a Supreme Court ruling.
Look, unfortunately for America, the court isn't necessarily wrong.
I mean, you have 9 justices out of 9. You have all of your, even the most leftist, radical justices are like, yeah, you know, technically Trump is right. And here you have this journal. You remember when they started saying this about me? Technically, JF is right. We had this on a secret audio of Kraut and T eventually, and he had assembled all of his academics around him to prove JF's video wrong. And they were telling him, you know, technically, JF is right. And now we have the journalist at CNN saying, you know, technically, the Supreme Court is right.
That this is the way the framers wanted it to be. They wanted Congress, the people who are closest to their constituents, to be able to make the rules of the laws. That doesn't change the fact that because of gerrymandering in the House and all kinds of other issues, they're not doing their job on a lot of the-
Well, I'm afraid that they might be doing their job on this because there is enough hate against Trump in the Republican Party that I don't know, we might have the numbers. And I don't even know what would be the threshold. Would we have a 50+1 vote? Would it require an increased threshold of unanimity? I don't know. There's no mechanism. They have to make a law first, and then they will have to vote on that, on Trump from within the parameters of that law. But for now, there is no law. So we don't even know what would be the conditions under which Trump would be found an insurrectionist. BlackRock to buy Bitcoin ETFs through its $36 billion Strategic Income Opportunities Fund. This is where there's so much money flow toward Bitcoin because you have these boomer managers and they're like, oh yeah, here we have a collection of things that you should buy. And it's like 1% diamond mines, 1% this, 1% that. And eventually it's going to be like, oh yeah, and 7% Bitcoin, of course. So much money is headed toward Bitcoin thanks to these passive flows. This is exactly what Michael Saylor wanted to tap into. You have passive flows of money toward companies you don't even understand. Why not send it toward Bitcoin instead? And finally, as a last news item for tonight, Michael Moore being a rat.
What is the crime? Because according to my knowledge of history, the enemies of Israel who have been persecuted, the Israelis, the Jewish people of this world have been persecuted for 5,000 years. But for the last 2,000 years, most of the persecution has come from white European-centric Christians.
You have to hate the white European Christian. Doesn't matter if they help you bomb the Gazans. Don't forget, don't ever forget that the Gazans have no power over you. You have to be scared of Whitey.
That's been your enemy. No Palestinian helped to build Auschwitz. No Palestinian stood on the docks of New York City when boatloads of Jewish refugees trying to escape the Holocaust came here to be protected by this country and were turned away at the docks in New York and sent back to Germany to die. No Palestinian did that. No Palestinian ran the Spanish Inquisition. Your enemy is not the Palestinian people. It is white Christian European.
Man, this whole video makes me realize Michael Moore is Jewish. Sometimes I see it only when they age. Sometimes I'm not up there in my recognition. And you know what? You know one thing that keeps me from recognizing a Jew? It's American obesity. I'll be very honest. You know Halsey, the Jew who was with us in the blood sports era? There's a certain amount of fat that will hide the characteristics of your cranium. And Halsey was this fat man, and I was like, you're telling me you're Jewish? I couldn't believe it because he had all of the feature of a white American. I believe that ultimately Michael Moore lost weight and now we can see the feature of his face and we can hear the intonation. And as Jews get older, they get a little more desperate for their cause. And I think that, you know, whatever is genetic history, I don't know that he's a Jew from that perspective, but I don't think he wouldn't be making that argument if he wasn't, or feeling somehow honorary Jew, a la Elon Musk. This changes my perspective so much, because Michael Moore used to be the guy who did the documentary on guns, but this documentary is also very anti-American white. You know, this documentary kind of goes into those places where they give you a gun when you subscribe to a bank account. And it's kind of presenting a vision of the hillbilly as the great danger of America. And then Fahrenheit 9/11. Was it kind of a misdirection? Was it a documentary meant to absorb the conspiratorial interest without truly delivering the ingredients of the true conspiracy? I'm left with all sorts of questions, because if I reinterpret all of Michael Moore's life as a Jew, it makes so much more sense, but I lose so much respect for him at the same time, because then there would be much subversion in what has been done. Lendald Guntram says, Wiki, Moore was brought up in a traditional Catholic home and has Irish and smaller amounts of Scottish and English ancestry. Some of his ancestors were Quakers. Well, okay. So he wouldn't be genetically a Jew, according to this. But we've seen in the case of Elon that having sex with Jewish women will lead you to basically have all of the affiliations that you would have if you felt that you are Jewish. So I don't know. Did Michael Moore reproduce with a Jew? I don't know. But a lot of his stuff makes sense from a subversive perspective. Dead Star says, Tix went on a 10-minute boomer rant today to push the idea that a true American rejects their tribe and ancestry. Not only is this the foundational thesis of wokeism, but it runs counter to the philosophy of every last one of Americans' founders. And he sends me the YouTube link to this. Yeah, I mean, the whole detachment from your legacy is not sustainable. intergenerationally. So to anyone who thinks you can forget about it and it's going to be okay, the problem is there are replacement forces existing around us. Yeah, you could be a revolted guy in the 18th century in America, and you could have a little revolted attitude. It wouldn't mean that you would get replaced by Arabs and blacks within 100 years, because there weren't planes, there wasn't worldwide travel, and you weren't really competing with Africans to exist. In 2024, we cannot afford this anti-legacy perspective. You are truly shooting yourself in the foot genetically and demographically if you cannot sustain against the constant flow of replacement migration.
Now, aren't you? Grow a victory garden. Definitely, that's what I'm going to be doing. That's my next personal improvement. I'm doubling the size of the garden, and it might be even more than double. I'm society. It has nothing to do with hyphenated Americans. I'm just being patriotic at the moment. That's real patriotism, by the way. Fuck the government. Government's not patriotism. The government is the biggest hindrance to our country at this point, because then I can wear a t-shirt and I can be comfy. Space heater, everything else. I happen to be part of that great project. And that's the way people need to think about themselves. Yeah, it's you gotta do you. Who gives a fuck? You like to cross-dress or something. Who gives a shit? Yeah, don't apologize to anyone. Unless you're harming other people or violating somebody else's rights, you should be able to do whatever the hell you want.
Well, the problem is at this point, the cross-dressers, what they want is to talk to our children. Thank you.